Welcome to episode 17 of Hang On To Your Hat. And as you can see, I'm here all on my lonesome. Danny's taking a holiday to Broome, but the good news is he's getting into some adventures over there and we've got plenty to talk about. There seems to be no shortage of dads.
Bad daddy, you're a naughty boy.
These days, fatherhood is everywhere. You can't get away from it. Not that blokes haven't tried. If you're not a father, you've got a father. A son of a dad or a daughter of a bloke. But either way, being a dad is no picnic. The fear, the anger, the confusion and, well, the love, of course. Oh. Eric Myers and Dan Lee, together with their special guests, are here to share the highs and lows, the joys and the agony of being a modern dad. But most of all, to let you know that you're not alone.
That's right. It is just me in the studio, but we're waiting on a call from Dan. He's going to ring in hot from Broome and let us know and let you guys know what the plan is for the show. We've been ambushing dads all over this country, so there's some good times to come. So I've got myself a coffee from Susie's Deli down on Easy Street, and I've got it in my keep cup. And I'm feeling very together, waiting for this phone call. He likes a bit of, you know, bit of tussling and stuff in the show, so I'll give him a bit of tussling. He's in WA and was set to ring me at 10 o'clock for us to do this hookup. And 11 o'clock came by. I sent a message going, "How are we doing?" politely. And he's like, "Oops, I did it the wrong way." He was going to add two more hours, which would have been ringing me at 2 in the afternoon. So, you know, I get one up on him before we even start. While I'm waiting for Dan, I'll give you a couple of personal experiences of what's going through my life since we've been doing this fatherhood podcast. And that has been a great deal of a great deal more discussion on parenting and also the variety of parenting and a huge amount more empathy. I guess empathy is the word because it's not sympathy because that means troubled, but just kind of comprehending the different things that different dudes have to go through and all the details. You know, I'm constantly now in conversations about all sorts of things that you might not think of. And here he is now. Are we ready? Oh, please. But I hope this works. Hello, Derek.
Hello, Derek. Me old mucker. How
G'day,
are you,
mate? Welcome to Hang On To Your Hat.
Do you know what I'm doing? You're going to hate me.
If you're fucking sitting on a beach getting served a pina colada,
I am literally sitting on a beach with my back against the coconut arm. Actually, I've got to watch those coconuts don't drop on me. A surprising number of people die from coconut strikes.
It's more than sharks.
it is. And looking at the blue ocean, coconut palm. That's literally what I'm doing right now, Derek.
Well, I've got to say.
How do you feel about that?
That is such a weird coincidence because I am sitting, well, I'm in the studio, but it's so similar because I've got one of the lights in the studio, two of them pointing straight at me because I wanted to do it because I thought, now Dan's not here, I can get a nice close-up video for the Instagram.
Well, don't feel
so
too
it's
bad,
like
Derek.
The sun blazing on my face a bit, even though it's LED.
And look, it's not much different. It's not much different.
Same.
I mean, it's
warm.
The same thing. Yeah, you're doing.
Totally rugged up, fully rugged up. Yeah. So we're both warm. We both got a blazing light in our face.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's good.
The difference is I've got a soy latte and you haven't. So
I haven't. They'll bring me one on the beach in a moment. I'll have my manservant bring one. you should see the children. There's a sparkle in Luna's eye that I've never seen. Just to be able to take their clothes off and be warm, you know. You forget how brutal, well, maybe you don't forget, but Melbourne winter's fucking brutal. And then when you get out of it for a minute, you suddenly go, holy shit, that's rough. Anyway.
It does sound like you're rubbing it in
everyone.
A little bit.
Yeah, I know. Sorry to everyone in winter.
I don't know whether that really helps. But, Most of our listeners are in California anyway.
Oh, right. Are they? Yeah. California and Casablanca.
Yeah, I pay a bot to download thousands of it.
The only reason I'm glowing, the only reason I'm gloating slightly is because I feel like we had a pretty brutal 3 months with the babies.
Yeah.
With the hand, foot and mouth disease and the teething and the fucking midnight explosive defecation, things like that.
You deserve it. I feel like
we've earned it.
absolutely, definitely. You deserve to be able to get the kids deserve to have a bit of a smile as well.
That's the thing. They've been bloody miserable. Or particularly Luna's been miserable, you know. So it is lovely to see her looking a bit happier.
Yeah.
And how's it going there? You all right?
Everything's good. Everything's good. The studio's going nicely. Lots of bookings.
Yeah.
I've got a class starting up, learn to podcast class, technical stuff.
Oh, good.
Yeah, yeah. So I've got the flyers out.
Now, you have
out.
Pressed record, haven't you, Derek? I know that's a ridiculous thing for me to ask.
Nah, it's the only time you've ever taken any interest in the technical stuff. I've pressed record on every possible different button I can find. I promise you.
Excellent. All right, good. I just want to make sure we'd started and I wasn't.
No, it sounds good for a tropical paradise. Yeah. I've got to say, before we get into the – we've got a little bit of body to insert in the show.
Yes.
Apparently. But so we know you're in Broome, you're having a great time. The kids are happy and they deserve it. And that's – I reckon that's got to be a big – if there's got to be a tip for young players is take that chance when you can. If you're struggling, you know, if you're struggling financially or with sickness and it's just this intense time and you really do get the chance. Like 2 days ago, I just, you know, I have the kids with me at work on the school holidays most of the time.
Yeah.
And sometimes I get a bit wound up and, you know, and go, I'm not getting much work done. It's a bit easier now. We've got the studio. They love it in here.
Yeah.
But I've just, you know, my spirit's broken, so that's much easier as well. But but you know, sometimes you can, if you're not getting stuff done, go out and don't get stuff done in an epic way.
Yeah,
do you know
what
I mean? Like, exactly. It's like, what are you going to achieve? It's like that thing of grumbling about everything and then sitting there looking at your Facebook for hours and hours or whatever it is. I just got the kids in here in the morning. I said, right, let's go. And we got up.
Yeah.
And we marched all through the city and we had a great time. We even popped into Hell's Kitchen, saw my old mate Russ, who runs there.
Yeah.
And once again, I was just saying in the intro that I've already done, sorry.
That's right.
I was just saying how I'm just constantly now, because of this show, talking to fathers with more empathetic interest than I've probably had before.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like listening, I suppose, rather than talking, rather than just comparing you're not comparing horror stories anymore. You're comprehending and absorbing, not just on behalf of our audience here, but you just kind of, it just triggers something a new skill, I think, of just listening and going, fuck.
And I think, well, it's like what you were saying about your old man and getting to finish a story. And I think a lot of fathers that I know, when I've genuinely inquired about how they're doing, it takes a little while for them to kick off, you know. But once they do, once they start actually telling you what's been going on, it all comes out then.
Yeah.
They really love an opportunity to just say how they feel or tell the story.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It's good. Yeah. Hang on. Now, we sidetracked there. You were saying – What were you saying?
That's it. I was just saying everything's running nicely here and saying how it all affects me.
But you took the kids. You took the kids out for a bit.
We just walked around the city. You just did a day just walking around and around. And we visited, like I was saying, we visited Hell's Kitchen to see Russ there and had a chat.
Yeah.
Launched into a father chat. And in the middle of it, I went, hang on a minute. Come on my show.
We're recording this.
Come on my show.
Yeah,
he goes, yeah, for sure. When? But where?
Yeah, great. I mean, that's how it should happen. It's a natural way of finding people then, you know, just kind of evolve, you know, they walk into it unsuspectingly.
Exactly. But
and you're right, though, like sometimes you can just switch and go, realistically, how much more am I going to achieve today by just getting more stress? And you don't have to go all the way to where we are. I mean, just to get a smile on their face for half a day or a few minutes really lightens your load as well. It certainly does for me. Just seeing the face change, a lot of my worries just don't seem so bad.
Yeah.
It's funny like that.
It's something I've been noticing with, you know, I harp on a bit about video games and screen time, but that's coming. If it's not there now, it's coming for you.
No,
it's coming for
everyone. It's on its way. Right? It's in the fucking post.
Yeah.
Jesus. So,
but what I've noticed is you've got to remember who the grown-up is. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It sounds like I've got an advice line, but this, when you ponder, you've got to remember who the grown-up is. And a kid who's obsessed with something, even if they're obsessed with, I know, fucking painting pet rocks or whatever, they need to be just shown how much fun everything else is. It doesn't take my son, who will just be totally obsessive Fortnite player or whatever he's playing. He's just gone into Risk, which is very interesting because that's an old board game strategy type games. It's pretty exciting. Yeah. Much better. But this obsession, but you get them out of there and it's not long before they're back to play fighting
that's
with
true.
Their sister and get, you know, conversing. You've got to show them that. Don't tell them that. That's piss weak. It's piss weak to sit there and go, get off that game, and then look back down at your phone to Instagram.
Yeah. And, you know, me and Tuffy, we went away with his boys and Sammy, and we just tried that out. You know, like they're bored for about 10 minutes and they want to do – we're bored, we want to do something, we want to be on the phone, we want to play a game on the phone. But if you just get through that bit, then it's not long before they're off building something in the dirt or they're playing with Lego or they're doing whatever. It was really quite extraordinary how you just have to push. Well, I don't know, it might not be the same for everyone, but at least in our case, it's just about pushing through that initial resistance and bang, they're in creative flow.
Yeah.
You know, at least for a while until they, you know, someone smacks someone in the mouth or something and then it all starts
again.
Well,
it is slightly more likely to get a blood lip than it is playing with an iPhone.
Right.
Like when you're playing the sword fights with sticks.
Yeah.
But who cares? It's
grass. Yeah, you gotta try and do that. Yeah.
Tell me something, Dan. Are you ready?
Right.
You ready to explain to the punters and me a bit? What's going to happen with our show while you're in Broome?
Well, I've got my portable podcasting gear here and I'm going to have some conversations with blokes I know up here.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm super excited about that because there's some real characters up here. I don't mind saying this sort of making what sounds like a bold promise, but they're great, fascinating guys with kids in various configurations. So I've got a good bunch of guys lined up. So I'll be sending those, you know, one-on-one conversations to you each week.
Fantastic.
And then we can either intro them or you can intro them or maybe you can get someone else in or we can just present them as they are, whatever you want to do.
I quite like what we've done for the first one is Dan has sent me through – a conversation he had with Will.
Yeah, mate of mine, Will.
Yep.
Will's the guy that I lived with, shared a house with up here, yeah.
Yeah, so and he sent me through to have a listen so we don't have to just stop the recording, stop the phone call and for me to know what's on about. And so I had a listen to that before and then, so then we'll play that for you guys.
Yeah.
And it's amazing.
I thought we'd start with that because that's sort of an introduction to the place, and he's himself not a father,
mm-hmm.
but what you'll hear is his conversation with me about returning to Wales when his father was dying. Mm-hmm. So it's a very I thought it was a really interesting conversation and a very detailed conversation of the. Of his father-son relationship.
It's huge. It was, just to let you know, it was beautiful. I would just want to take the chance now to just throw out a huge thanks to Will for that story because I got a bit overwhelmed. Not emotional about, you know, like, oh, it's a sad story or anything, because it was, it is part of a, it's coming for everyone, like we know.
Yeah.
Right? But yeah, it just, I just got emotional about the fact that he's sharing that and we're just not exposed to these kind of stories.
Yeah.
To just get us ready. And that's why it just feels like why our culture has such a, gets hit, smacked around so hard by death.
Yeah,
because we're in denial, and like you'll hear in the story, you know, we're in denial even when it's our turn, and it's reasonably obvious what's coming, and we're in denial then, and then everyone goes along with the ride with the denial and goes you'll be right, you know, and stuff like that.
Exactly.
And it's just it was just this magnificent resource for me as well, because it's, you know, you can't be 50 and not have that coming for you at some stage,
right?
And a couple of notes I made, because I'm not going to put it on and then talk about it afterwards. What do you think, Dan? Do you think we'll just have a chat about it now, or let the people
without giving too much away? Maybe with, I don't know. What do you think? What do you want? Depends on what you want to say. I mean,
we'll stop it now. We'll let the people have a listen. So I'll drop it in there. And then
call me back later or something, and we can.
No, we don't. Yeah, it's there's more magic at play here than what meets the eye, Dan. Okay,
I was saying that for the benefit of the listeners, as though you were going to listen to it and then call me back.
I've already listened. Okay. So I'm not. The smoke and mirrors doesn't need to be that thick.
Okay. All right. Go on.
Okay.
Then.
So here's Will, talking about his father's death experience.
Yeah.
I was talking to Jonesy about his mother staying with him and all that, and the importance of trying to deal with death in a different way. Because there's this whole terror, because we never talk about it, we never deal with it.
Quite a phenomenal thing to be part of.
Yeah.
It's quite a trip.
It's an extraordinary thing. Were you at your dad's wedding before he died, though? You were there for the shirt thing.
All of that.
Wild thing.
And it was not actually until you're outside of that bubble that you look back and realise how... I know you are really aware of... what's that? There's so many different angles to it, but one of the things that I really noted was the way people... interact with you from outside of the bubble, looking in.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
They do exactly what I'm doing now, which is like, oh, fuck, I can't deal with. It's easier for me to not deal with the Rani thing. It's too late for me to engage and all of that shit. But I watched people and their discomfort. How do I approach? What do I say? But to me, I was like, oh, it's curious, isn't it? Look at them. They've been really weird because they don't know how to engage with someone on the inside of the bubble. But it's fine. It's just a bubble.
Yeah.
But it's not until you're outside of that bubble once again that you look back on it and go, yeah, that was pretty full on.
Yeah, because you're his son in this case, so you're in the very centre of this.
That's right, but with a small group of of same people.
Yeah.
So they're
the people who are clearly going to. So there's a group of people who are always going to be. Once this someone's going to die, there's a small group of people who are going to be closely involved.
The wingmen.
And that's just kind of known, because you've got obviously immediate family, maybe a best friend or a partner of people, and then everyone else is a bit sort of outside of it. So you're inside that bubble and they don't know what to do. But we know what that's right. like.
Yeah, totally.
You feel... But I keep thinking, why is that? Why can't we do something better than that?
Like I said the other day, I kept... Being in that position gave me license to be completely free with my expressions. You know, I'd had friends, and be qualified. you know, without going, oh, that was disrespectful, you know.
Yes.
So, I'd had previously friends whose parents had died, and they would say, you know, mum passed last night, you know, and I was saying things like, you know, when someone would say, how's he doing? I'd say, he's fucked, and, you know, he probably will have carked it in a week, you know, stuff like that, you know. And it felt fine to say it. It was almost like put some light relief on it.
Yeah.
Curious thing about my old man going was that he just didn't want to accept it.
Move that forward a bit. Sorry. I'll just...
Move it more into the polar pattern that it's designed for.
Yeah.
He couldn't... There was no talking of it.
Yeah. You
know? There was no... There was no acceptance of it at all.
Did you talk to him?
No.
Was he already kind of out of it?
No.
So what did you talk about?
Fuck the weather, man.
And this is when it's absolutely clear he's dying.
Yeah. There's not. You're not going to be here next Tuesday.
Right. And did you... Well, how did you deal with that?
Well I arrived, you know, on the plane. Like, it was like, your old man's going, you're going to get on the plane. I was like, I'll be there tomorrow sort of thing. Last minute flight, all of that. The darkest time for me was here to Perth in the plane. And I sat next to two very sweet, old, rampant Christian American tourists.
Yeah.
Who were just the most beautiful Ma and Pa Kettle couple who were in their 80s travelling the world.
Yeah.
And were so excited about going to Perth because it was the city of lights and this is where the lunar... You know, when they landed on the moon, they asked Perth to turn all their lights on so that they could remember that. Wow. So he was relaying all of this to me, and then he was a fascinating guy, and he was just really lovely. And then he was asking, where are you going? And I was like, my old man's going to cark it, and I'm on my way to Wales. And then this amazing, compassionate man and the woman that he was with, the couple, they... You know, he was like, well, you know, we're Christian, so we believe we're going to see them again and in the next life. And he was asking me all of these things. And then, but it was really kind of, it was quite beautiful. And then before the flight had finished, he'd given me their details and he offered me a room in their house and come to America and all of
that.
It was amazing. That was the most, that was the darkest time of the whole chapter. From then on, it was kind of...
Was it better for having spoken to them, or do you mean...
No. I was just in my own head. I just actually didn't want to talk to anyone. This old fellow just kept prying me.
Right.
And because I was really vulnerable and, you know, not cantankerous and quite open, you know, when we're really emotionally vulnerable, we're open... That I just found myself engaging with this guy, which was really nice. But it was that, it was being that vulnerable, lonely, accepting that my dad is going to die. That was the hardest trip. Was those 2.5 hours after that? Oh, and the plane ride to the UK as well. But when I got there, he was completely lucid. He was fine. Well,
apart from was he like walking around? Or
yeah, only just. But he was completely lucid.
Right.
But when I got there, I was like, right, family meeting. Right, first thing I want to do is confront the old man. You know, I've got some shit I want to talk about.
Right. You thought this was kind of the time
we got some shit to get into, man.
Mm.
Fully, we're going to go deep. And they were like, my family, who are all much different from me, were like, no, whoa, you can't do anything. And then and I was like, fuck off, I'm going to, you know. But it was my cousin, who's a GP and she'd had lots of experience of death, was like, you have to walk as slow as the slowest person in the team.
Yeah.
And that's
because they're all close to it as well. Yeah. Everyone's in this bubble.
Yeah. So that's him. So if he calls the shots, then you can bring this up.
No, that's interesting.
Let him lead. Yeah. So I waited for him to say, you know, I'm on my way out. Let's have a chat. But he didn't. He was like, so I've ordered these shirts. They should be here next week. And I'm like, dude, man, you're not going to be here next week. And he went down
Was that the moment when you really realised that you weren't going to get what you came for? When he, the shirts thing, was that symbolic of the... or was there something else?
No, I think it was something earlier. He said, "Why have you come?"
Right.
And I was like, "What do you mean?" And he said, why have you come now? And I said, "Well, you're a crook. I've come because you're a crook." I didn't want to say, "Well, you're fucking dying," because that would have given the game.
For Christ's sake, don't tell him he's dying. Did he have cancer or something?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And, you know,
he'd seen the prognosis. He'd seen, obviously his doctor had said to him at some point, you know, this is not getting better.
Yeah. Yeah, it's curious. Death tricked him. Death is a fucking... I believe in the Grim Reaper, but I don't believe in the entity of the dude with the, you know, salmon mousse.
No.
I don't believe in that. But I do know that when I've been around death, I've felt the presence of a massive entity.
Well, it's 50%, isn't what? It? Well, if birth is side, death is the other. It's got to be 50% of the energy has got to be death, right?
Sure.
Or something like that. It's massive, right? And we'd never even talk about it until we're in that room, in that bubble, and we're the one on the deathbed or we're the one next to them saying, "Your shirts are not coming, mate."
Not coming.
So it's got to have some power,
It's got power.
Sense.
They come, you know, I understand why the Christian Grim Reaper, the guy with the scythe and all of that, and we talk about it in a physical, you know, entity.
Mm.
But there's a presence. I've got no doubt. The death I've been around, I've felt it. The calm, the almost intimidating, but the calm. And the night that he went, it was there. You could feel it. The sun didn't set till 11:30 that night.
He was going to go that night necessarily. It wasn't until. Well, you thought it was soon.
Yeah, because nobody's got, you know.
Who knows?
Nobody's got times or. Oh yeah, we can't. Yeah, 11 o'clock. What that? The last night that he went. He'd been out of it for about 2 days. I mean, the guy had a dream death, dream death. Everyone, his family were all around him.
But he was going, "What are you all here for?"
Yeah, and it made me really angry. Actually, it made me really angry that I was like, no one will have a death like this. Like, it was the first time I'd actually thought of it that, you know. Everyone's here for you, you know. And I know this isn't going to be my death. Like, I fucking wish you could just... just sort of... I don't know. I felt like he missed it. He missed the beauty of it. And how
and
lucky...
the opportunity.
The opportunity. Mm. Yeah. The opportunity, because... And he said to me, "Why are you here?" I said, "Because you're crook. Wouldn't you come if I was crook?" Which threw him on the spot then. He couldn't answer that. Mm. He left the conversation alone. But he did say, "Why didn't you come when I was stronger?" And I was like, "Because you know. Oh, I just, you know, now I had time. Now, you know, it's like, you're not getting fucking stronger, man." He went down I was there for a fair while. But when I got there, he was good. You know, he just got out of the hospital. He looked fucked, but he was going down. But when he went, it was like a week, and then gone.
Yeah.
Dream run.
Well, that, yeah, yeah.
My old man's life was a fucking dream run, really.
But was he, you sound a little bit like he didn't deserve it somehow, he didn't make people happy or across the board then?
Oh, he was an amazing guy, he was a very... interesting character. He did make people happy across the board, that's true. But I was surprised that he held on to that character.
Right.
To the very end. I was like, I kept thinking he's gonna let go, you know.
So he's pretty traditional stoic kind of.
That's right, yeah, you know.
Bloke's bloke.
Mm.
Right.
Yeah, but I was angry. I was angry that I felt that he not so much didn't deserve it, but I wanted him to acknowledge it.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. It's not as nasty as don't deserve it. No. It's just more like
thanks
he's
for
not
coming.
He's
thanks
not for, making use of this thing.
Yeah.
Like this is like people don't recognise.
And then I found myself going, I feel uncomfortable sitting with you because you're not going to do this, so we're just going to talk about the weather. Literally, we're going to talk about the weather, mm-hmm. the tides.
Mm.
You could see the bay from where his seat was, you know, so it was like, this is, we're wasting this time. But he was adamant that he was going to come good. So I guess with that in mind,
you wonder what was really going on in his head. If he really had was in so much denial that he genuinely believed that,
or no, whether, I think he was really scared, but right. he couldn't let that be shown.
No, he couldn't let it crack
because that would invite it. You know, invite it.
It might just pour out then.
But you know, it just going on that story about death, like the palliative nurse came to stay on that last night, you know, saying the time is close, you know, no one's like, well, is it going to be six? Because I want to go and play pool.
Is close.
Yeah, it's coming.
Do they have a voice like that?
Yeah, yeah. No, but they are fucking odd.
Yeah.
Odd. Like, and this is, man, and it's surreal. This is the other thing about the bubble. Is that I believe, and you know, they're going to lock me up, whoever hears this, but we're crossing these worlds.
Yeah.
And this crazy shit starts to happen, which you accept because you're in the bubble. It's not till you look back at it that you realize things are odd, and that's death had settled on the small town of Newport. It's like something out of a movie. Death had settled in the small town of Newport that night looking for his quota, and he took Ryan Thomas and he took the priest down the road. You know, who also cucked it, God Bob, they called him. They took him as well. And it's like, all right, that'll do me. I'll be off. You know, and I'll come back next month and I'll take Mrs. Simmons from down by the beach there. So we were kind of looking after my old man, but I was saying to my cousins and who are medics, like, I'm starting to feel bitter. Because I feel like I'm wasting this time that could be special. Because really we need a professional here to be doing this so that we can enjoy what time there is left when he's lucid instead of looking after the guy who's dying. Anyway, it didn't happen until the last night. And they were like, okay, my stepmom was like, we're going to get this woman, this palliative nurse to come in and she's going to sleep downstairs, etc. When this woman came, there was a very general consensus that he was going to go that night. And so my nieces were there, my sister was there, my stepmom and I were there. But we were so in the bubble that this woman came and she just had this whimsical oddness about her. Her eyes were kind of a bit spacey. And it wasn't until later that I figured out she deals with someone dying every night.
Yeah.
She was touched by it. Anyway, so
she's probably addicted to it.
Yeah, yeah.
To that energy of it.
Yeah, and she would talk
because it's
to
profound.
Him. He's gone. Yeah, he's drugged out to sleep, but she would talk in this really whimsical way. Anyway, his sister comes. She says goodbye to him while he's sort of in this coma, and she leaves. She's quite emotional, and then I'm going to stay up with him all night, right? So I'm digging in for a night of telly and tea.
And he's on the morphine now, right?
Yeah, and he's been unconscious for...
Yeah.
Or sleep, just deeply asleep.
Yeah.
Since the day before. And so I'm she's down there, the woman with her magazine, dressed like a 16th century nurse. And he's in this bed over here, you know, with just asleep, just like a dude who's drunk and asleep. And she's got the telly down there and I'm in the really nice living room at the other end of the hall. There's a really long hall that joined these two parts of the house. Anyway, my nieces and I have a fairly, well, they're leaving to go and sleep in that house that we've rented, and they're like, we don't want to go, etc. And I'm like, I'll call you if anything happens. And we hug and they leave and I'm making tea and I'm looking through the hallway at the lounge room and the television's on and the channel flips over like as if someone's pressed it with a remote to a Western movie. My old man loved Westerns. This Western comes on and I went, oh, I'll have a bit of that, I said. So I'm having a cup of tea, making a tea, and going, Westerns come on. I'll go in there and watch that in a minute. And then Mary Poppins comes up the hallway, but she's hovering I know this is bizarre, but she's hovering towards me.
Mm.
It wasn't until hindsight that I looked back and go, I think she was hovering.
That with them nurses on skates, weren't it?
But do you remember that scene from Ghostbusters the baby gets stolen by that Mary Poppins phantom who comes through the sky with the pram?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, yeah.
That's what instantly conjured me as she hovers up the hallway like this towards me. Yeah. Yeah, and I'm like, hello, cup of tea? And she goes, oh, no, thanks. It won't be long now.
and then hovers back.
And then I went, okay, good. What are we talking then? A few hours, do you think? No, a couple of minutes maybe. Like that. And I went, what the fuck? And like, it was just so, and my nieces were just getting into the car and I ran out to tell them, he's going. You want to come back in?
She'd know by the breathing and the all that stuff.
But it was the whole...
Yeah.
And it wasn't until later. Like, so I'm like, the old man's turned the Western on because he's already gone. Mm. He's already part of the stratosphere.
He's in the wires and the electrics.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. And she's floated up the hallway towards me and then floated back down again. And then that pandemonium of, fuck, he's going. And I just got there in time as he took his last breath. And he was gone. But he wasn't gone.
Mm.
Like, physically he was gone. But nothing changed in that room.
Well, no, he wasn't physically gone.
He was spiritually gone.
Yeah.
But nothing changed in that room. And then it was all over very quickly. The Reaper came, took the body away, and we all drank gin and tonic in the lounge room and shut the door.
Said, so, well, that'll be that then.
That'll be that then. Get him out. Off you go. And so he was gone. And I slept upstairs from that room in this mezzanine, and I went back in there, you know, an hour later. I'm fucking still here. It was like that really tangible, he's still here. I went outside. It was 11:30 at night, and the sun was just setting on the horizon. It was bizarre, and this dead still, like, just dead still. And went to bed, and when I woke in the morning, he was gone, like... I came downstairs and the first thing I heard was birds, and it was this very, very tangible emptiness of the room. So it was a and then the bubble starts to, then you start to step outside of the bubble.
So so it's his death, but you're also under the spell of death.
That's
a bit.
Right. That's
that,
right. Yeah,
when you're in that.
Yeah.
Sphere, and,
right.
and depending on your sphere. Proximity to the person that's dying, as in your emotional and familial proximity to this person, you're kind of being drawn by death as well. It's an extraordinary, extraordinary thing.
And it's very, it's amazing, and it's not something to be scared of. It's really very, very beautiful.
Yeah, what is our fear, you know? Because I think about it and I think, well, what am I really worried about?
It's the compassion that comes out of people. Not the people who come and say, I'm really sorry, your old man cocked it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the compassion that, because everyone is so raw, your nerves, your heart is all so raw, and when the collective of people who are all so raw come together, then there's this incredible sharing of just affection and emotion. Everything's on the table. There's no bullshit.
So... Exactly. So in a way we long for it. We want it. It's necessary.
We want that connection.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. The death's more than
so
these
why are we
bits.
Scared of it?
There's
well,
other
I,
stuff
I
going
think that
on.
The Reaper thing is a really poignant it's a poignant indicator. That we fear death. We fear this grim Reaper character with the scythe and that is personified in the idea of death, and because a lot of death is grisly and horrible,
true.
And not natural.
Well, that's true.
And we look back in the old days where people chopped each other's heads off and shot each other.
Mm.
So that's always associated with death. It's not always a beautiful transition. My old man's passing was a beautiful transition into the into the next.
Beautiful
place.
Transition, but a shame he didn't kind of. But then maybe he was doing it himself internally.
Well, absolutely,
I mean,
and that's
knows.
What I couldn't begrudge
it is ultimately
him.
His death, isn't it?
Exactly, and that's what they were saying. This is his gig. Mm. And I couldn't begrudge him that because he held on to it till the very end, you know. he really held on to it. It's like, fucking hell, it really is you. Right to the very end, you just hang on to it. But the whole town, the interesting thing is, because I come from this beautiful little village, they were all in shock. He was such a strong character. Right. He was kind of revered and hated, and but he was such a strong character that they were all in shock. And I would walk up the main street. They all kind of knew who I was because that's Ryan Thomas's son. He's from Australia, you know. People would either come up to me and be like, how's your dad? Or they'd just give you a wide berth. It's because you're deaf. Because you're deaf. And I find that too.
Yeah, I'm like, we do it. I mean, we do it.
Someone's dying. I don't, oh, fuck. I don't even know what to say.
I think because it's such a unique experience. I always feel like I don't want to get it wrong with people because
it's like asking a fat woman if she's pregnant.
Yeah, exactly. Well, there's that. And asking a pregnant woman if. No.
Yeah. Oh, when are you expecting?
No, you're right. Oh. It's that way around, yes.
Right. Oh, like a crow.
But it's also my fear of approaching the person that's in the bubble is weird. I mean, it's all cowardice, but it's partly because of this is a one off thing, and I don't want to taint it. But then why do we worry about upsetting the person? Because they're not going to be. I know that if my family member was dying or died and someone came up and said, how's your dad? Or, geez, your dad's a bastard or something and doesn't know that he's dying, and they're going to hate themselves for it, for saying the wrong thing. But it's not going to change the intensity of my experience. In fact, you're more likely to have a softer heart and be more compassionate to someone's discomfort.
I had a very amazing experience the day after he died. We went to the local boat club, which was used to be his watering hole, but as I said, the whole village sort of knew who he was, and I was there with my three nieces and my cousin's son, and we went to the bar. It was a quiet night, and there was a table of older people sat there, and one of the blokes was a local doctor. He was talking about my old man. And he was saying, did you hear Ryan Thomas died? I was down here once.
Did he know you were there?
He didn't know.
Oh, great.
And my nieces and cousins were going, oh, fuck, fuck. And the barmaid, she was going, I'm really sorry. He doesn't know who you are. And James was going, let's get out of here. I was going, no, this is going to be good. And so he was going, did you hear? He died. And they were going, yes, I did. It's terrible. Yes. And he was going, I had my boat on a mooring down here once, and it wasn't my mooring, it was someone else's. And he was watching me from his house with binoculars. Mm. And when I came back, there was a note on my boat saying that if I had parked it on this mooring again, that the boat would be burnt to the waterline. And I was like, this guy's about to say something that he's going to regret if he knows who we are.
Yeah, yeah.
So I walked over to him and I said, look, before you go on, I just want to stop you from putting your foot in your mouth. I said, everything you've said is correct, but you just need to be careful. You never know who's listening. And he went, what are you talking about? And I said, you're talking about my father. And it's just his jaw hit the ground, and the older women he was with just went, there wasn't even any like, oops, they just went, fucking shoot us, please shoot us, please shoot us. And I was trying. I really felt for him. It turned out he was a twat, so I shouldn't have. But I was like, "It's okay. Everything is okay. I just know you're about to say something next level, and I just wanted to stop you." You know. And he was going, "But you don't look like him. You don't even sound like him."
So I know what I'll do. I'll dispute his genetic connection to the deceased.
And I said, "It's quite deliberate. I live in Australia. My accent's different. Look, it's just cool." And I left, and we went outside, and he followed us out, and he said, I can't believe you don't sound like him. Hilarious.
Yeah, he's desperately trying to.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So that, yeah, that's one of those situations.
Yeah.
Okay, so, yeah, there it is. It was a great conversation we had. That's actually a piece. There's a little bit either side of that I cut out because we got to the main story in the middle. But one thing about Broome is you find that people. I don't know whether it's just Broome, but people feel more inclined to be candid and relaxed here. It's very easy to find yourself sitting on a porch, having a cup of tea and telling stories. It's a real story place, Broome. Mm. So,
yeah, I wonder if that is. I wonder if that is because it's your place.
Mm.
You know, like it's your magical place.
And, yeah, and
it's,
I don't know.
And it's regional and right. Whereas maybe that's the same how other people feel all around the world when they're in their place that is small enough for this kind of feel.
Yeah, probably is the case. But Broome does really have that reputation. Yeah, like the romance of Broome is one of anecdote and mystery and, you know, because it's got such an intricate past and everyone made such, you know, no one's here by accident. It's a very... Everyone's got such a huge story. So, yes, that's my hope is that the future conversations I have with people that I record will be similarly candid and honest, you know. You do really find yourself sitting talking about things just like that quite regularly, and that's why I love it. That's why I have to come back every year, largely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, what did you want to say?
First thing I got while I was listening was that sense of gratitude that we were getting to hear about this experience. I probably got a decent dose of imposter syndrome, I guess, when this grown-up stuff kicks in.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like I just kind of go, oh, but then, you know. But I guess that's part of being a grown up.
Oh, there was a whole lot of us being ridiculous and swearing and stupid before and after that story. So don't get the impression that it's all that kind of. I just didn't include that stuff because it wouldn't have made much sense to anyone else.
Yeah, no,
because
it's
so
fine.
Specific to us and our. So yeah, it wasn't all grown up.
Yeah, and then I thought, well, it's not imposter syndrome if it's something that I've got to deal with myself, you know, at some stage.
Yeah.
Well, that's no great secret. So it helped me. And I wanted to say thank you. And I made some notes. I was very impressed with his use of the expression salmon moose when relating to the Grim Reaper. is that everybody? I thought I was clever for understanding where that came from, but I assume it's probably – one of the biggest successful movies in comedy history. So is it from The Meaning of Life, isn't
that? You know, he and I, Will and I have a big knowledge of pop culture, especially prior to this recent century. Yeah. So we tend to talk a lot in that stuff. Yeah,
I enjoyed it thoroughly.
And that is what
I think the first time. Anyone mentions the Grim Reaper or anything like that, I just think, but did I have the
salmon moose.
Tinned salmon? Darling, tinned salmon?
Yeah.
I find it just ridiculous and unfair that we even have to accept mortality. But that's another story.
But it was a beautiful, intimate tale of a father and son in this old house together. Even though he's not a father himself, but it seemed totally appropriate for all us fathers out there, you know.
Yeah, I found it a bit interesting with the other members of the family doing, because they're in the medical field doing the medical stuff, and sort of that conversation about, hang on, this is an experience that. You get one go at,
right.
You know.
Yeah.
But then I thought, wow, it's probably an ancient thing of trying to not be in denial, but actually trying to somehow help as much as you can from the days when you had to. You're the difference of their comfort levels are completely reliant on members of the family busying themselves trying to make you as comfortable as possible. Whereas it's probably a built-in sort of programmed thing to do what you can.
Yeah, yeah.
But that they had to break out of. So sometimes, in some ways, it's a bit harder being medical.
Do you know what a death doula is?
No, but I know what a birth doula is.
Well, people can be death doulas.
Yeah.
They spend time with and prepare people for their own death. I think Ben Lee, the musician, is actually a death doula as well.
Wow.
So that's an interesting idea and an interesting thing to be part of, helping people through the whole process of dying. Something to think about. I'm going to have to go because the kids have vanished and so is Missy.
But that, right. that was fantastic. And thanks for bringing that through. And people, there's going to be tons more of this stuff. Yeah. And I've got a few lined up as well. I'm actually going to go hit the road with my portable gear. Now I've got the chance.
We've got some great stuff coming, I'm sure of that. And there's other people when I get back to Melbourne too.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's awesome. Pretty exciting. All right, go and find those children. Go and be a father.
Okay. All right. Bye.
Bye-bye. Well, that's him gone, and that just leaves me. All right, so I just like to have the last word, to be honest with you. I haven't got really anything else to say apart from tune in next week. That awesome podcast was recorded at Castaway Studios in Collingwood. Here, we provide affordable, accessible, professional podcasting production facilities to the full range of podcasters, all the way from basic studio hire right through to full season production packages. You can get us on castawaycollingwood@gmail.com or just look up Castaway Studios on all the social medias.